Welcome to Cider Chat. It's a fun episode this week because I get to share with you, finally, some of the stops I'm going to be making along the way on my upcoming cider-fueled road trip. Now, don't get me wrong, we're not going to be putting cider in the gas tank of my 1997 Plymouth Voyager van.
That wouldn't be realistic, Rhea.
I know, Mr. Quince. Of course we can't put cider in the gas tank to fuel a van.
That would be fun.
It would be, Medlars, but it's not realistic. When I say cider-fueled, it means we're going to be, you know, stopping at orchards and drinking cider and meeting makers and cider fans.
And I hope we'll be able to talk about some Perry pears.
Yes, Perry, and I'm sorry about last week's episode when we really didn't get to talk about the nursery and how well it's doing.
Indeed, Rhea. That skip over my topic did not go unnoticed.
Duly noted, Perry Pear, and I'm sorry about that. And I totally agree. The Perry Pear saplings are doing fantastic. They couldn't be happier with all the rain and the sunshine.
And the good company of fellow Perry Pears.
Well, you know, that goes without a doubt. Perry Pears love hanging out with other Perry Pears. They're not like solo entities like the Sorbus domestica.
Moving right along, Rhea.
Thanks, Mr. Quince. So we're going to be talking about the cider-fueled road trip. And I'll be sharing with you a mini story about why I decided to apologize to a billionaire cider maker. We'll also be hearing from Lee Reeve of Insider Japan as he shares with us a story from the recent summer issue of that online magazine that's both in Japanese and English on Shiwa Cidery in Japan. Plus, we get to hear from a great sponsor, the Northwest Cider Club, for their upcoming cider box that you can now order today. So hit the bubbles, Mr. Quince, and let's get this episode rolling.
Roger that.
Hello, my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. Coming into this episode, you heard my friends, the Talking Palms. We have Mr. Quince.
Hello.
Who is our resident Quince taskmaster and is also practicing to become a stand-up comedian. How's that going, Mr. Quince?
I'd rather not talk about it.
Oh, Mr. Quince. Practice makes perfect.
Moving right along, Rhea.
And we also have Perry Pear, because we love Perry.
Yes, that's me. I am Perry Pear.
And you also heard from the Medlars, which is a bit of an unknown fruit, but really, they're honestly like so endearing to me. And I could go on and on about Medlars, but I won't right now.
Oh, thank you, Rhea.
You're welcome, Medlars. We're all here in the Cider House this week, rolling out this episode and getting ready for our upcoming cider-fueled road trip out into America. So let's take a little pause here, Mr. Quince, and come back with some of our plans there, shall we?
Roger that.
Walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Well, the Talking Palms and I are packing for our upcoming cider-fueled road trip.
Cot.
Check.
Hammock.
Check.
Campfire chair.
Check.
Two coolers.
Check, check.
So while they're making sure that everything is packed away in the van, I have been setting up some of the stops along the way. And the first stop that we're going to be going to, we'll be headed to Hudson Valley in New York State and meeting up with Elizabeth Ryan. And if you haven't heard about her, I mean, you're going to be in for a treat because I probably have about 15 hours of recordings after I'm done with Elizabeth. She is amazing. She graduated from Cornell University with a degree in pomology and now has a number of farms in the Hudson Valley and supplies a lot of food for the region and, of course, makes fantastic cider. So I'm really looking forward to that. So that's going to be our first stop along the way. And just so you know, I'm coming down from New England. So I'll be heading south on the highway and turning to the west and continuing on from New York State into Pennsylvania. Now, the next stop will be at Space Time Mead and Cider Works in Dunmore. I've been trying to meet up with Dan there for a while. just kind of like really dreaming about it since I first really got to know him and what he's doing there and following along on the Space Time Meet and CiderWorks Instagram feed, which I adore because it's funny. It has this whole like branding around, you know, the astronauts and stuff and the galaxies. It's just really cool stuff. So I'll be there in my old kind of like stomping grounds of the Scranton, PA area, because for many years I worked in Pennsylvania and traveled through this area. It felt like nearly every week. So it's going to be a little bit of a homecoming for me. From the Space Time Mead and CiderWorks, I'm going to be heading south to Big Hill CiderWorks and camping out in the orchard with some cider enthusiasts. We're going to be tasting a special treat from the UK. It was all part of the One Juice initiative. So I'll follow up on that, but that's going to be lots of fun. And there's going to be other people there too. So I don't want to reveal it all, but I will be on social media throughout the week. So if you want to follow along, I am on Twitter at CiderChat, on Instagram at CiderChat Ciderville. And I also have a TikTok account at CiderChat. And of course, there is the CiderChat Facebook page. So please follow along all those because it certainly helps the podcast get a little bit more views and bring some people who might not otherwise know about this topic even or want to learn a little bit more about cider because they are curious and helps lift all the cider boats up, right? Because that's what it's all about. It really costs you nothing. It's free to follow. So please do. And did you know that CiderChat also has a Venmo account? If you don't know what Venmo is, it's an app that you could just tag into and send some quick cash. It's like a tip to a content creator like myself. So if you're getting value from CiderChat and you're really jazzed up like we all are to do the Cider Road Trip and do some real-time broadcasting along with a number of episodes that are going to be coming up on CiderChat, well, that's a great way to do it. Just check out at CiderChat on Venmo and you'll see the nice little new header we have up there. Just gearing up for the road trip. You know, there's all these like little sundry things that take place, like going up to the gas pump and of course also checking the tire level and making sure there's enough air in the tire. That always costs money. A lot of little things that add up because on this particular trip, it's not really being sponsored by anyone. It is out of pocket on my end, which is why I was so stoked because I haven't had any time to set up this van that I've wanted to take cross country, but of course I couldn't because there's a pandemic. And now I'm just feeling like I could roll out a little bit closer to the East Coast because truthfully, I put in a new alternator in the van and it's not really the wattage that they wanted for the alternator. But the guy at the junkyard convinced me that it would work for the van because, you know, it's an old van and you don't have all the highfalutin type of technology that could suck from the power source, the alternator. If you don't know what that is, well, you're not alone, but it's really like the electrical system for the engine. And as the engine turns, it keeps the battery powered up. So I'm fingers crossed that this used alternator I put in there is going to be getting me back and forth from the journey. I feel pretty confident about it. I mean, you know, it's not 30 years old yet, right? Had only a little corrosion on it. I was able to tuck it in there, but a little nervous. Anyways, my little toolbox is definitely coming with me. Interestingly, too, I also have some new wiper blades on there, but the little doohickey, like it's a multi-switch or something that's on the windshield wiper blade, sometimes I turn the blades on and they go really rapid or they'll go on and back. I mean, there's like no control. I just have to kind of like zone into their frequency and ask the wiper blades to work. So the van has personality. But it's a little cruise mobile and it's going to get me there. So fingers crossed and hopefully I won't have to dip into the emergency funds too much. But again, if you want to help, it's at CiderChat on Venmo. Every little bit counts. And now a word from a sponsor of CiderChat.
Emily Ritchie here from the nonprofit, the Northwest Cider Association. It can be hard to find a good selection of independently made craft cider, and even harder to know what's good sometimes. So we launched the Northwest Cider Club a few months ago. We'll do the picking for you. The Northwest Cider Club invites you to drink in the Pacific Northwest. We're a region that grows the majority of the nation's apples, and we produce a wide range of cider styles. Being a club member gives you insider access to the Northwest cider scene. We ship quarterly boxes to your door from up to 10 different producers all in one box. Our early fall release is an exploration of apples. One of the featured ciders this quarter is Rootwood's single varietal Harrison cider. The Harrison apple originates in New Jersey before the American Revolution. This apple is yellow and elongated in shape with rich yellow flesh. It can produce a superior flavored cider by itself, and it was much sought after in colonial America. Once thought to be extinct, a single Harrison apple was actually rediscovered in the 70s in New Jersey, allowing for the reintroduction of this variety through grafting and budding, though this apple is still quite rare. This cider was produced with apples from Rootwood's estate cider orchard, where more than 500 Harrison trees grow today. Rootwood Cidery is in central Washington along Lake Chelan. The apples grown in the valley benefit from warm summer days, cool nights, glacial soils, and pure lake water. The company is owned by the three Koenig sisters, Emily, Anne, and Kate, who have deep roots in the Chelan Valley with over 100 years of orcharding history. Learn more and subscribe to the Northwest Cider Club at nwciderclub.com/podcast.
In case you didn't know, Emily Ritchie is also the executive director of the Northwest Cider Association. So she's got a lot going on there. And I think this Northwest Cider Club is like the bomb. Think about it. Up to 10 different ciders in the box. And the Harrison apple? How cool is that? So we're going to be hearing from her in the next couple episodes, a number of them coming up, because they are a sponsor of Cider Chat. So by drinking some amazing cider from the Pacific Northwest, you also get to help this podcast. I mean, talk about win-win. Check it out at nwciderclub.com/podcast. Next up, we have a very special treat because we're going to be getting a look into the summer issue of Insider Japan. We're going to hear a story read by the publisher, Lee Reeve. And yes, he does have a Scottish accent, which just makes it so much more fun.
Hi, this is Lee Reeve from Insider Japan with an article from our latest summer issue, page 16, titled Inspiration in Iwase, Shiwa Cidery. Shiwa Cidery is located in the town of Shiwa, which is in the western half of Iwate Prefecture, as is becoming more commonplace these days because of distance and ongoing travel restrictions prompted by COVID-19, I was relegated to spending a few hours speaking to them via video online. Fortunately for me, owner Donald Jeff Howard and cider maker Mika Wallenius decided to connect outdoors in their fields, and I was treated to a lovely countryside view as we discussed their cidery. The obvious first question was, how do they end up in the middle of Iwate Prefecture? As it turns out, Jeff met his wife Saori, a native of Shiwa, in New York. Mika was raised in Seattle, Washington, and came to Japan as an English teacher fresh out of college, first to the neighbouring town of Hanamaki, and then years later in Shiwa, when a job opening tempted him to switch. The two met while working together for Shiwa's Board of Education, and both were privately wanting to do something new, beyond teaching. For Jeff, being in apple country but not able to readily find cider, he concluded to make his own. Iwate is the third largest apple producing region in Japan, after Aomori and Nagano prefectures. Mika, who was already thinking about leaving teaching for making wine or beer, shifted his attention to cider when he stumbled upon what Jeff was up to. The situation here is perfect for making cider, explains Jeff. It just wasn't on anyone's radar. There are a lot of apple farmers growing delicious apples, but no one was making cider. And, kind of the mindset in this town is, if you want something and it's not here, then you just have to do it yourself. And that they did, but the journey was long and it certainly wasn't easy. Having no actual background in cider making, they had to first learn how to make it, Mika getting some training at Bearing Brewery about half an hour away by car. Then they had to find a place where they could make it, raise funding, apply for licenses, and wait for approval, and so on. According to Jeff, For about 2 years, he even wrote a series of articles for the local newspaper that chronicled Shiwa Saidari's campaign, as well as enlisted any help where they could find it. Jeff and Mika got their start around 2015, but it wasn't until 2019 that they finally finished construction on the cidery, an old farmhouse that had to be converted, and they didn't start producing until early 2020. Using IBC totes for fermentation and bright tanks for aging and filtering, Shiwa generated an astounding 12,000 litres of cider last year and is looking to hit the 18,000 litre mark next year. What makes Shiwa Cidery unique compared to other Japanese cider makers that we featured in the magazine is they don't own their own orchard. Instead, Jeff and Mika rely on acquiring apples cultivated by farms in various nearby districts, and the cider's names reflect this. Red Glen, Long Hill, Old Manor, Red Rock, and even a farmers' cooperative. It's an admirable approach and a fantastic win-win for both sides, creating a symbiotic partnership where each party contributes while growing together. It also makes for interesting ciders, as you never quite know what mix of apples you'll get from any one farm. When it comes to styles, Shiwa ciders are all hopped. Mika says it has a lot to do with his Seattle upbringing and admits that he was heavily influenced by Reverend Nat's hopped ciders and gained much from watching his videos on cider and cider making. I was very lucky to get the opportunity to try them all, including two meads, a ginger and cucumber, and found them to be quite good, especially considering that they were all first offerings. Shiwa ciders pour a light to medium golden yellow with lively carbonation, adding a wonderful audible component. Bringing in the glass close greets you with inviting bright green apple aromas, and you can taste the same. At 6.5% ABV, Shiwa ciders are fermented dry, making them easy to drink on their own or with a wide range of foods. Great ciders and great people behind them. That's what's really at the heart of Shiwa Cidery. Speaking with Jeff and Mika, it's clear they're serious about what they're doing, but it's also apparent that they both care deeply about community and getting others involved, a virtue that cannot be commended enough as businesses and livelihoods all across Japan continue to be threatened by the ill effects of the coronavirus pandemic. I'm very much looking forward to seeing Shiwa Cidery's next steps and future offerings, and I encourage you to discover more about them. You can check out Shiwa Cidery online at shiwacidery.com.
Thanks, Lee. That was so fascinating. Shiwa Cidery. It's spelled S-H-I-W-A. There's a link in the show notes to Shiwa Cidery and also to Insider Japan, which I highly recommend getting a subscription to and helping them keep cider on the map, both for Japan and all of us in the rest of Ciderville, so we could stay up to date and interconnected. Again, that's Lee Reeve from InsiderJapan.com. Well, I guess it's about time now to talk to you about my apology to a billionaire cider maker. And you might want to take a guess on who that is, because it's really only one that I know of in the world. But before I go there, I need to give you a little bit of the backstory. My life is made up of many different dual or parallel universes. You know, I am a craft beer writer and I'm also a cider podcaster. The craft beer writing is something that I just seem to have been doing forever. And more recently, it's almost now going on 7 years ago, I started this here cider podcast. I was involved in cider way before I became a craft beer writer, though. But at that time, there was no media for cider. Nothing, really. I had to push and prod my beer editors to have me put anything at all into the magazine, or I should call the newspaper, or what they call the beeriodical that came out bi-monthly. And typically, all those articles would come out in the fall. So I began my career in cider really in 1994 when I started teaching cider making. And then you go forward to about 2003, and that's when I got my column in Yankee Brew News. So I'm actually coming up to like 20 years of writing as a craft beer writer. I have my regular bi-monthly column, which I have so much fun covering my beat, which is Western Mass and the Berkshires. I want to say, back when I started, I could count the number of breweries on one hand. And now it's just, I mean, it's just like every week I think I hear about a new brewery starting. Many little villages will have like two breweries in one. It's kind of like you could just walk from brewery to brewery. Suffice to say, this is just an amazing area for craft libations. And of course, in concert with that, it's also the epicenter of where cider, modern day cider, really got its charge. And that was really in big part to Franklin County Cider Days, which is an annual cider event. And it's the oldest running event of its kind in the U.S. And it's where many cider makers, both from North America and even further afield, have come to really get inspiration. Lots of educational workshops. There's a cider salon. Just an amazing time. And has created like a foothold for cider makers when there was, for so many years, nothing of its kind. It's really only recently that we have had cider festivals. So, you know, the cider's history on the modern level is very, very short and still evolving, which is what's so cool. So there I am. I'm involved in cider. And around 2003, I got this gig writing for Yankee Brew News, the Beeriodical, doing my bi-monthly column. In concert with that, when you're a writer and involved in the libation world, well, often you get pulled into different festivals and also judging. And one of the annual competitions I would go to was the Great International Beer Competition, which then became the Great International Beer and Cider, and now is the Great International Beer, Cider, and Sake Competition. You know, it's like keep on adding on the names, right? But back in about 2003, when I started writing the regular column, I then was able to get invited as a judge at the Great International Beer Competition. Now, mind you, I had been involved in beer for a long time. I started out really as a home brewer and then, you know, moved into cider and wine. So I was a fermenter. I just call myself a fermenter, really. I think that just hits it straight to the point, doesn't it? So I get this invite to go to this competition. And I'm sitting with a whole bunch of brewers from all over New England. We're down in Providence, Rhode Island. That's where we were meeting every year. It was so much fun. I'll tell you, what a fun time. It was a weekend where we did the competition on Friday. And then Saturday and Sunday was a beer festival at the Providence, Rhode Island like convention center. And it was huge. I mean, the likes that I haven't seen in a while. It was a huge, huge beer festival and really rowdy. And we would all meet up, all the beer writers for the Yankee Brew News. We'd all be at like one hotel and we'd just take over the town. And of course, I was the only female. At that time, one of the few women, I think, in the U.S. writing about beer. And so it was a great position to be in because it was a novelty. And I guess, I don't know, maybe that's just been kind of my life, always been like a novelty, an anomaly, I should say, really. So we're down there in Providence, Rhode Island, and I show up for the first year competition was all beer. And then the second year came around, and all of a sudden we started seeing ciders coming in. And at that time, you know, we had like hundreds of beers, in came some ciders, and we had, I think that first year, if I recall, and for a number of years subsequent to that, we had about 3 ciders in the competition per year. And of course, because I was both a craft beer writer and a cider maker, and somebody who was really involved in cider in the region, I was immediately put on the judging panel. And we judged the ciders. And at the time, I remember writing on the... See, I feel bad about this because it's really not about the billionaire cider maker. This is about me as a judge and being a novice judge back in 2003 or 2004. Despite the fact that I had been involved in cider for a number of years. I know now, looking back, that I was still very much a novice. And I remember writing, "Got apples? Like, where's the apple in this?" And I wasn't tasting any of the apple. Well, there's a reason. It's because I was fully based in the U.S. And at that time in the U.S., the number of commercial cider makers was really, really tiny. We had West County Cider, which started in 1984, and then just a handful of cideries in the Northeast and a couple across the country. But again, it was kind of like you count the number of commercial cider makers back in the early 2000s, kind of like on maybe both hands. So for a couple years, we had these ciders coming in, and I wasn't impressed, because here's the one factor. They were not relatable to all the ciders I had been drinking in the U.S. As judges, we are subjective, and we know what we know based upon what we had. And the thing about cider and cider judging moving forward is that if you're only in one territory, and that's what you're drinking, and even if you're bringing in ciders from outside your territory, maybe another state, or in some cases, right, another country. So let's say you're based in North America and you're bringing ciders in from the UK. They do travel, but there is something really necessary in my book that you need to travel to that destination. And it's not just about traveling to that destination and drinking the cider. It's really all about the juice, the non-fermented juice, to be able to have that as your baseline to know where the apple can go. And I didn't know that. I didn't realize that. It's something that's new and something I'm seeing more and more in the U.S. as cideries are not only offering their cider product, but also pasteurized juice or fresh pressed apple juice, because there's like nothing better than that. I mean, when I led the Monterey Bay Cider Tour most recently in 2020, the one thing I was really adamant that I wanted to get before we tasted any of the cider of all the makers that we're going to was to offer the people on the bus some fresh pressed apple juice. Because if you could taste Newtown Pippin in the juice form and then go to the cider, you suddenly, it's like the synapses in the brains are going wild, because it's like a connected, it's interconnected. It's like, holy cow, that's where it could go. And if you taste Newtown Pippin juice in California versus New York State or New England, it's a different beast. It has different profiles to it. It's really subtle, but it's the subtleties that are so important. And that's where I'm going. And I highly recommend it if you enjoy judging or just increasing your palate, is at a cidery, see if they have juice. Juice is not for kids only. It isn't, or for the designated drivers. In fact, the last time I was in France attending Cider Expo in 2020, there was definitely some juice that I took home, because I knew I wanted to like mull over that, and that in turn would help me then move on to the cider. And that's really the best part of cider, is that it's never ending. There's always something new to learn about and to grow with as it continues to create its story in the modern day. So now let's fast forward to actually just a couple weeks ago. I went to a new craft brewery opening on my beat for Yankee Brew News as a writer. I got a special invite to the ribbon cutting event in Springfield, Massachusetts. I went down there and, it was just really a really fun time, because we have very few Black-owned breweries here in Massachusetts. I think about 5 in total. And Ray Berry, who is the owner, is a man of color. He's African-American, and he has been working on this project for 7 years, and he was being mentored by Jim Cook, the founder of Boston Beer Company, which also owns the label Sam Adams. Twisted Tea and a brand known as Hardcore Cider. Now, you haven't heard of Hardcore, perhaps, or maybe you have, but if you're new to cider, you probably haven't because it was stopped in 2012. But it was launched in 1997 is when Boston Beer Company launched the Hardcore Cider brand. They had a number of different ciders on the market. They had Black Cider, Golden Cider, and another one called Crisp Hard Cider. Now, does that come to mind out there for any of you out there in Ciderville? Crisp? What other cidery uses that as a name for their brand? And if you guessed Angry Orchard, you'd be right, because the same company that owned Hardcore Cider stopped production, rebranded, and came out as Angry Orchard. So, what about this apology? Well, I'm at this event, and Jim Cook is there, and I get introduced to him. I'm feeling kind of crappy about how I judged those ciders many years ago. So I began with, "I owe you an apology," which definitely made him pause. And then went on to tell him about the judging of cider back in the early days. And of course, it was a very small community, even in the craft beer world at that time in the early 2000s, and what happened at that event and how I really misjudged his ciders. Then we started speaking a little bit about Alan Tringham, who he had brought over from Bulmers, or, well, actually Alan had retired from Bulmers, a UK cidery, and was now consulting to the Boston Beer Company and the Hardcore Cider brand. And he mentioned that, well, you know, we were using French and Italian apples, and that might have been part of it. And my reply to him was, I wish, again, that I knew then what I know now, and I know looking back that I misjudged those ciders.
Hallelujah!
What a relief. I can't tell you how many years that has been hanging on me and thinking, here I was, I had the press, I had the ability to write about something, and I totally dissed on a cider back in the early 2000s that was unfair. And I feel absolved. Even saying it here on Cider Chat, and as embarrassing as I can be, it's the truth that you don't know what you don't know. And once you know something, you can never go back. And probably there's someone right now out there in Ciderville, perhaps you, who has done the same thing. And I want to tell you, it felt great saying that to Jim Cook. And I think for him, it's like no big deal because they could just kind of go and rebrand, and they hire new people and they could change brands whenever they want to, because at that level, it's a whole other wheelhouse, not the kind that I'm in, that's for sure. But for many other people, that type of misjudging and not really knowing the scope of where cider could be and then putting something down on paper, that could have a devastating impact on a cidery that otherwise should be lifted. So that's a little bit of my experience to you. I hope moving forward that it really encourages you to really elevate your own palate. And there is without a doubt, and it would be ridiculous of me not to mention that one way you could do that is to come along on a Totally Cider tour with me coming up in 2022 as we do look to travel to both France and the UK and to taste the juice and the cider. Yeah, it's really all about the juice. Get to know that blend. Certainly, I think that home cider makers have an upper hand on that because they do have the juice. If they get that fresh pressed apple juice from a mill or they're doing it themselves, it really, really upscales your whole experience. But there's so many of us who don't have that opportunity. And a great way to do that is come along on a cider tour or travel your own path, you know, definitely. It's all good, but don't leave it with just one territory and think that you know it all, because I've been in this for more years than I would like to count, and I still have a long way to go. Well, I have to start getting ready for the road trip next week. I have to head down to the Talking Palm soon, but I'll let you know that there will be a podcast next week. We're going to be featuring a conversation with Nicole Todd of the Santa Cruz Cider Company on how she had a home fire during COVID, coming out of that, kind of like Phoenix rising out of the ashes. Quite inspiring. I'll also be talking about a very special cider that they have there now on tap at the Tasting Room in Watsonville, California. But let me just step in the cider house here and see what's going on with the packing.
Microphone?
Check.
Camera?
Check.
Recorder?
Check.
Cider?
Check, check.
Hey, it's looking good, Palms. Are we getting ready for everything? Anything I need to know about?
Mr. Quince is underneath the van changing the oil, Rhea.
Oh, really? Maybe I better go help him with that.
Check, check.
Okay, Ciderville. Well, if you have a Quince working on an oil change, it's best to go help them out on that. So with that, I'm going to leave you here. As always, this is Rhea Windcaller and the Talking Palms, and we're all looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like palms. We love orchards and having fun. There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider. We like palms. We like orchards. Having some fun.
There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like palms.
Oh, yes, we do.
We love orchards. Having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like orchards. Having some fun.
Yeehaw!